I know that many of our presenters have asked that we give them the opportunity to present earlier, so we're going to try to accommodate the people who are coming to present. Members, welcome to the Education Policy Committee. Hopefully we will complete quorum soon. I think we're short of one member, but I think we have Senator Franson now. So thank you, members. Today, what we are attempting to do is, I know many of you serve in the Education Finance Committee, and Senator Wigger tried to convene a conversation from our that involved our different partners, and the intention here is to do the same in policy. I know that most of our partners are, of course, this is a budget year, and that's what we want to do. We want to work diligently to figure out, you know, how do we generate revenue and how do we invest in our education system. But clearly attached to that will be ideas, proposals to work on policy issues. And I know many of you members are working with these different partners to make sure that we coordinate both the investments that we make in our school systems with the policy that is going to really guide those investments. So today we have a number of people who have expressed a desire to come and testify and let us know about some of the issues that they are pursuing this year or that they intend to come to you to talk about, members. So the first person that we are going to, I think all of you have the agenda, but we're going to change the order, members, if we need to, because we have some people, as I said, that may need to address the committee earlier. So is Roger Aronson from the Minnesota Elementary and Secondary School Principals Association. Thank you so much for coming to our committee. We would like to open an opportunity for you to let us know about your priorities. I don't know if you have a handout for the committee. Okay, it's coming. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations. For those of you that are on the Finance Committee, you're getting the same handout that we had in the in that committee as well. It's a pleasure to be here, Madam Chair. I do think it is there is something that is very neat about just the fact that you have labeled the group here as community partners. I think we all appreciate looking at our overall goals as being in partnership with this committee and the overall community of education. And these are good lists of the folks that you have on here and the issues that come forward. A couple of things as the Education Policy Committee that you're going to hear that are of interest to both the elementary and the secondary associations. As you all know, there were five task forces that took place over the last 2 years. One of them, and they were on school funding, they were on testing, on bullying, on principal evaluation. One of them that you're going to hear about a lot this year is bullying, and we hope the committee takes a long look at bullying. We had members that served on these task forces. Just as some of the general conclusions that we like you to just be of note and that are of interest to school principals, we need bullying programs. We are interested in whatever support can happen out there for school districts in programs. We want to influence student behavior and change behavior. We would like to avoid the mandate components of this. Some of those, and you'll hear about this as the session progresses and on those issues, but the mandated reports and the categorizing all of the incidents of bullying and et cetera, and not to get into bills that haven't been introduced yet, but those will be introduced. We know the discussions are taking place about that as we speak, and we appreciate being involved in those discussions as well. One of the things that I wanted to direct your attention to is that you're going to hear a bit, and there's a funding component of this, but about the Principals Academy. Some years ago, and it was an initiative of this committee, established a Principals Academy, which was a high-level training program that was housed at the University of Minnesota. This program slowly, it was used by many districts. Minneapolis sent students there, or principals there, Anoka sent principals there, as well as districts from throughout the state. It was highly successful and well-respected. It's not in the governor's budget. There are former Commissioner Segrin has helped lead a group to recreate this program at the University of Minnesota. And there obviously there's a funding component to that. But the policy part about this being in the district interest to train principals, we think this committee would be very interested in, and we hope that bill comes here for you to take a look at as well. And both groups support that strongly. One of the things that we want you to be aware of is that next year starts mandatory principal evaluation throughout Minnesota. 13-14 is the first year of principal evaluation. 14-15 is the first year of teacher evaluation. And you're going to hear some presentations about the policy components of implementation of that. And we want you to look at those closely. It is important to us that principals continue to be the educational leaders in schools and that the primary responsibility for evaluation, the primary responsibility, stay with the principals. A few other things just to introduce you to, that we have 1,700 school principals throughout Minnesota. This is all the elementary and secondary assistant principals and principals throughout the state. Senator Claussen is one of our members. Our principals come in all shapes and sizes throughout there. We want to help answer the questions that you have about the various bills as they're presented here through the session. We're available to do that. We won't always agree on things, but I think you'll find that overall, the majority of the discussion is in a very positive fashion and moving towards agreement. So we do think that, let me leave it at that, Madam Chair. I might say as an aside before I'm done, one of my other clients that's not on the list, I also represent the Minnesota State High School League, and we will from time to time appear in front of the committee. The league doesn't have a legislative agenda, but things seem to develop that have some interest here from time to time. And so we will be available to answer those questions as well. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I think Commissioner Segrin came to my office, and I think she's been visiting with many of the members. The Principals Academy is a model that is very, I think, well-supported in the Senate. I don't know if I'm speaking for everyone, but I think that the request that they are making is about $450,000. So it's a very modest request to do something that is nationally recognized as a very good model. So I think some of us are reviewing that very closely, and I believe that there is a great support, and hopefully we will be moving in a direction that will support, your the organizations.
We appreciate that very much, Madam Chair. We look forward to talking to you about that program. Yes.
Yeah, and bullying is another thing. Members, we probably will not hear the bill very soon, and the reason is that we're trying to make sure that, all of the constituency groups meet and talk about, what's being presented. So when it comes to us, I think they're doing some incredible work in trying to really connect with communities, schools, superintendents, people throughout the state of Minnesota, so that when that bill becomes, part of our hearing, it will have tremendous input from different communities, and we're looking forward to hear it. But clearly, it's apparently not ready, and that's why we don't have it in our agenda yet.
Madam Chair, if you indulge me for one second, I forgot to mention as well, Senator Nelson's father was a principal as well, so we feel well represented on the committee.
Yes, you have a great memory. Thank you. We indeed have tremendous experience in this committee, so we're very proud of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arnson, just one comment about the Principals Academy. I was fortunate enough in the 1980s to go through a similar program. I think it was the Blandon Foundation at that time that sponsored it, and it's a very worthwhile program. It really helped a lot of assistant principals who were aspiring to be principals, and it was project-based, so it was very much a reality program. So just a word of support. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Daniel Sellers. Welcome to the Education Committee. I think we also have a handout.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good morning. As a former teacher, I'm honored to serve as Executive Director with MNCAN. And I want to just spend 30 seconds talking a bit about where our policy recommendations come from, and then 2 minutes about the policy, and then I'll be on. So the policies themselves are...
I'm sorry,
yes, ma'am.
But I've been told that you need to say your complete name again and the organization you represent for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Daniel Sellers, Executive Director of MNCAN, the Minnesota Campaign for Achievement Now. So the policy proposals that we put forward are locally driven ideas. As you'll see on the handout, they come from local and national research that we invest in. We conduct listening sessions across the state with community stakeholders. MNCAN has more than 5,000 members who provide input on our policy proposals and ideas and feedback. We seek guidance from teachers, principals, superintendents, those most closely connected to students. We partner with local research firms to conduct statewide public opinion polls, and we'll actually be releasing a new poll in the next couple of weeks, which I encourage you to look out for. And we weigh the opinions of our local advisory board. So they really are locally driven ideas. And what I want to do on the backside is I lay out our three policy proposals, and just we made a similar presentation to the Finance Committee, so just focusing on the policy pieces of the proposal. So the first, increasing access to quality pre-K. MNCAN was an early sign-on to the Mini Minds campaign, which is seeking $185 million allocation tied to high-quality early childhood programs. And the first three bullet points there around awarding family scholarships based on need in the local market and making sure that the programs really are high quality and tied to the parent aware rating system. The second is we really believe we need to build quality and capacity in all providers. So that includes school-based, center-based, and home-based programs, all of which are eligible to be rated under the parent aware system. And we believe we need to allow parents the flexibility to enroll their child in a quality program that fits their needs. Second, we're really focusing on how do we cultivate a high-quality public charter school sector. So we know that we need to sort of make some changes to get back to living up to the promise that charter schools have in this state. So the first thing we're proposing is holding those schools to exceptionally high standards, particularly for student learning. And that includes establishing a definition of low-performing schools and creating incentives to close down low-performing public charter schools, and we support them. At the same time, when I speak with principals at some of our highest-performing charter schools across the state, they continually rank their number one need as more flexibility to hire the best teachers possible to meet the needs of their school. So we would like to work with this committee to find ways to ensure these school leaders can find teachers that are willing to teach in their communities and meet the needs of the mission of their charter schools. And finally, we believe that in order to make progress on closing the opportunity gaps that exist in this state, we need to ensure that schools have and support a great teacher in every classroom. This starts at the beginning of the pipeline. How do we raise the quality of teacher preparation programs to make sure teachers are coming to the class ready to be successful on day one? Second, we support Governor Dayton's investment in teacher evaluation, and we actually believe that we could go even further in making sure that the teacher evaluation model is funded successfully. And I would encourage us to make sure, from a policy perspective, that those dollars really are tied to meaningful professional development for teachers so that they can be successful based on the evaluations and feedback they receive. And then last, we believe we can continue to provide districts and school leaders more flexibility to retain highly effective teachers by leveraging the new teacher evaluation framework to inform their decisions when layoffs are required. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for all the work that you have been doing in terms of collecting statistics and bringing that information to the public and to us. I think that has been incredibly helpful. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Just please, to testifiers, don't forget to sign in. And I'm going to call you Senator for the rest of your life. I believe I'm going to ask Senator Salzman to come in. I think she has a commitment and she asked it.
Thank you very much, Madam
Welcome
Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm Kathy Salzman, the State Director for Students First, and I've had that position since October of this past year, and I also had the honor of serving on this committee with many of you, and it was an honor, and I know the task ahead of you is very important. Students First is a national organization, and we are in 17 states, Minnesota being one of them. And as a state director, it is my responsibility to work with our local legislative team to be able to find the policies that work in Minnesota. And so as we talk today about the Students First agenda, it is one that is very specific to Minnesota. There are pieces in our national policy agenda that work in other states, and we believe here in Minnesota we are focused on those that we think will have the greatest impact on students. What we believe, and I have a handout here, what we believe is that great teachers make a tremendous difference for students of every background, and all children deserve to have outstanding teachers. We also believe that every child, regardless of their zip code, deserves to attend a great school, and all families should have quality school options available. And we also believe that public dollars belong where they make the biggest difference on effective instructional programs, and we must fight and for those ineffective practices that really are no longer serving students. When we come to you with policies, what will maybe make us a little different from other organizations is that we're going to come to you with putting students first. And not that everybody in this room doesn't care about kids and students and achievement, but we're going to be really focused on advocating for how does this policy address the achievement gap and how does it really serve students best in those regards. We have three different policy pillars. One is to elevate the teaching profession. We know that an effective teacher in front of a classroom is probably what has the greatest difference on a child's achievement. We support teachers. We want to make sure that they have the support they need, they have the feedback they need, the professional development, and they are also paid well for their performance. So that's something that we feel very strongly about. We also empower parents, and that's our second pillar. Our second pillar, looking at choice, looking at what kind of information parents have, and then our third pillar is spending wisely. In terms of our reform agenda for 2013, the one thing that I think this committee will focus on, because I know you all care so deeply about this, is our achievement gap. And what's difficult in Minnesota is that we really love to hear the great news, but it's the news about an achievement gap that is the largest in the country. It's graduation rates for children of color that are the worst in the nation. That it's embarrassing to us, it's unacceptable to us, but how are we going to address it? And if I could instill in you a sense of urgency on that, and I know that for some of these policies we've been working on them, but is this the year to have a serious conversation? So in terms of teacher evaluations, to keep the work that has been done, to keep it strong, make sure that it's a robust and meaningful system and that you have the resources and the trained and effective evaluators to make it meaningful. We believe also that school districts should have greater flexibility and school leaders in their staffing. So that goes beyond LIFO, last in, first out, to give flexibility so that you have the best teacher in front of students. The other piece we will be working on is charter school reform. And this committee did great work in 2009, and I was the chief author of that charter school reform bill. But at that time, what we said was, let's not wait another 5 or 10 or 15 years to do reform. And while we now have the strongest charter school law in the country, we also have some issues that we need to deal with. And so, as Mr. Sellers noted, having stronger charter school accountability and stronger closure provisions for those persistently low-performing schools, but also having provisions to address those schools who deal with students who have special needs or those who are doing the graduation recovery program. So some of those are the pieces. And then to spend wisely, and we've talked about that within the Finance Committee. So I think that's my 2 minutes are way over. But if you have any questions, Madam Chair, I'm happy to take them.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Senator, I appreciate all of the work that you've done on schools in the past. But with regard to Students First, I'd like you to address the report card. Mm-hmm. And how, especially those areas that caused Minnesota to be rated significantly below Louisiana.
Right.
Senator Saltzman.
Madam Chair, and Senator Carlson, the report card was a evaluation of policies. It was not an evaluation of our students' performance, of our teacher quality, anything else about our state. It had to do with a set of policies that if you are going to create an environment that encourages reform, it reinforces innovation, that you would have some of these policies in place. And so it was spread across every state. What I often hear, and what you may hear from times, is that as we talk to school districts, we talk to teachers, we hear them say, I wish we could do that, but we have this rule in place. I wish I could staff my district differently, but I have to follow the contract. I wish we could do some of these things, but we can't spend our dollars that way. I wish we had the leadership we needed, but we don't. And so when we hear that, we might say, well, then why might we look at some of those? Some of the pieces in that report card that had to do with vouchers, that had to do with parent trigger bills, which had to do with, you know, mayoral control, maybe something that in some school districts is a policy that they should be discussing now. They are not on the agenda for 2013 for Students First in Minnesota. So I understand that when this policy, people said to me, how could we possibly get a D? Because Louisiana, when you look at some of their graduation rates, they are now better than Minnesota for children of color. When you look at some of those districts who understand that their students are not doing well, they're hungry. They're hungry to say, we have to do better. And so they're having some conversations about policies that don't work, that are the status quo, to say we need to be doing some things differently. And that's maybe why Louisiana got a better score than us, because they're implementing some of these policies to try to make a difference. And in many cases, you're seeing results. Their graduation rates overall are not better than ours. But when you look at the achievement gap, many of these states are starting to close the gap because they're having the courage to do this. When you look at the national agenda and President Obama and Secretary Duncan, they support many of these policies and have urged us to have the courage to look at them.
Thank you. Follow-up?
One follow-up and comment, I guess. Senator Saltzman, I have not found a mayor that yet wants to take over the school district. And that's one of the indices that we fell way behind Louisiana, is having mayors taking over school districts. I really don't care for that particular list of criteria that puts us behind Louisiana, because it has some of those kinds of things that are really a little bit off the wall. And mayors taking over school districts mm-hmm. is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other questions, members?
Thank you, Senator.
Really appreciate it. Ms. Armstrong, from the Minnesota Gifted and Talented Council, thank you so much for coming to testify. Please.
Yes. Absolutely. My name is Tina Armstrong. I am the president of the Minnesota Council for Gifted and Talented. I wanted to tell you a little bit about MCGT. We are a statewide nonprofit support and advocacy organization for Minnesota's gifted and talented students. We've been around since 1956, so for a very long time. We have over 600 members, and actually when you take into account our local chapters, we've actually got thousands of members. We've got 27 chapters around the state. Mostly organized by geographic area, so we've got, you know, Lakeville, Minnetonka, Rochester. A lot of the communities around the Twin Cities have a chapter of MCGT, as well as some outstate communities like New Prague. Our largest chapter is our homeschoolers, as well as we've got some around our twice exceptional students that are both gifted and learning disabled. So we do have a twice exceptional chapter too. To your comment, Madam Chair, about policy being very closely tied to finance this year, that could be not more true when it comes to the Minnesota Council for Gifted and Talented. We have had two statutes on the books since 19 since 2005, one for gifted and talented programs and one for finance. They were both passed at the same time. And our gifted and talented student services statute is strictly permissive. It allows districts to identify gifted and talented students. It allows districts to have gifted and talented programs. It allows for them to provide staff development around gifted and talented. It's the funding that really has driven gifted and talented services in Minnesota. So the fact that districts have had money that could only be used for identifying gifted students, for providing gifted and talented programs, and for staff development has given the incentive, since it could only be spent this way, for districts to do that. And so we have grown since the revenue was put in place from having five full-time gifted programs in Minnesota to 17. We are now at a spot where we've got 5.7% of our students in this state are identified as gifted and talented. And our concern is very much what happens when this funding goes away, because we don't have a mandate. And we're very concerned that unless at the same time as our funding goes away, we put in a mandate that districts do these things. And I hate to be sitting here and actually pushing for a mandate. But unless we do that, we're very concerned that the money, even though the money is still going to be in the district's coffers, is going to flow to other areas where there is a mandate or to operating expenses of the districts. Minnesota still faces significant challenges when it comes to our gifted and talented education. And, you know, among those, we've got our identification of gifted and talented students from underserved populations. Well, we've gotten up to the point of almost 48,000 kids identified as gifted and talented. We know we've still got an achievement gap when it comes to our gifted and talented students. So, you know, we have the challenge of building an infrastructure to ensure teacher and administrators are trained and gifted and talented. You know, one of our districts up near St. Cloud did a look at the incoming teachers, the last 50 incoming teachers, and one teacher had 1 hour of gifted and talented in their pre-service. So we have challenges if we're not going to have funding that's dedicated to this on an ongoing basis. And then another need we have is responding to the needs of gifted learners in rural settings. Our partner organization, Minnesota's Lucky, we've got both the Minnesota Council for the Gifted and Talented, my organization that is primarily parents, educators, and psychologists, but it's primarily parents. And we've also got the Minnesota Educators for the Gifted and Talented, and they did a wonderful white paper on how to do gifted and talented services in a rural setting. So that is really what we're looking for. I did a lovely, you know, I did the statutes on the back side of my handout, so you can see the wonderful places where we say districts may do this, but it's not a district's must do this. And that's what we're facing when it comes to GT. Minnesota gives currently $11.5 million, and we're concerned that without a mandate, that funding is going to flow elsewhere other than GT. And that would put us in the bottom 10 states nationally. There are only 10 states that do not fund gifted and talented on a state level. Many of you are in both finance and policy, and I know I'm talking here before policy today, but they are so keenly tied together that particularly for our GT, since there is no mandate elsewhere. And so I'm welcome to any questions you might have.
Thank you. Ms. Armstrong, I think that this will be an area, of course, that we will be reviewing as we get, further into this session, because there has been, I think, multiple members are really asking about this, whether or not we have enough funding, who are these 48,000 kids, you know, what districts are they coming from, and the issue that you raise for me personally is a very important one, which is the ethnic and racial background of these kids. But more than anything, you know, how do we make sure that we are serving these kids properly and that we have the funding that is necessary? What are we doing with this money? So I think those are questions that are before this committee, and we will be reviewing that as we move forward.
Thank you very much.
You. Questions, members? Okay, we have Amy Wallstein from the Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the Education Committee. Do you have a handout?
I do. Mike's going to get it. Good afternoon, Chair Torres-Ray and members. My name is Amy Wallstein, and I'm the Director of Education and Workforce Development Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to present before the committee today. The page is handing out a handout that summarizes our positions on various education policy issues. It looks a little bit different than one that I've been handing out in the past couple days. Our comm shop got their hands on it and made it look a little bit nicer than I was able to. I wanted to just highlight some of what I talk about in that handout. At the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, we've done a lot of work in the past year to revise our education and workforce policies to focus on strategies that we feel will help make Minnesota known as a skilled workforce state. And why is this important? Because we have several things going on in education and in the labor market over the next several years. Demographics are changing rapidly. Baby boomers are retiring at a very fast pace, and the projections from Department of Economic Development are showing us that we're going to have 900,000 job openings over the next several years. And as we're looking at the supply that's going into the labor market, there appears to be a shortage. And particularly with labor market, or particularly in the areas of people who have been able to complete post-secondary education to some level, two-year degrees, four-year degrees, et cetera. And we have an increasing number of our population that is on the other side of the achievement gap. So the challenge is to make sure that the populations that need to get further education are able to access that and complete it. So we're focusing on strategies that will increase in the short term the supply of workers, but more so to the purview of this committee to strengthen the pipeline from early education through adult careers. And so our priorities for this session focus on the alignment of K-12 and post-secondary education. We're very interested in working on the grade 11 to 14 initiative that the Department of Education has been working on with the Office of Higher Ed and the MNSCU systems. We're very interested in expansion of PSEO and early college programs, particularly around aligning funding and providing communities with more opportunities to develop those programs. We're also on a little bit more of a non-legislative front, trying to encourage our local chamber members, our local businesses, to get more involved in their communities and partner with their school districts. We have some local chambers who are providing really great programs that get CEOs into the classrooms, and then that leads to interest in careers earlier, internships, mentorships, and that, because businesses are interested in engaging in their local communities and in education. So at the Chamber of Commerce, we want to help our local partners to find ways to do that effectively. We've also been engaged in the conversations on teacher evaluation. We hope to see a strong piloting going on over the next year, and also having the conversation on how teacher evaluation then fits with the existing QCOMP program. We're very interested in data quality as well. We have a lot of data in Minnesota, and as the statewide longitudinal data education data system comes online and is better able to be used, we want to make sure that parents and students have access to that so that they have the information that they need to make decisions, but we also have the information to improve programs. So with that, thank you, members of the committee, Madam Chair. We look forward to working with you on education and workforce development.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilson. Next we have Ms. Jan Olswager from Education Minnesota. Welcome to the Education Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jan Olswager, and I'm the Chief Lobbyist for Education Minnesota. Education Minnesota is an organization that represents 70,000 members. And just so you know, we represent K-12 teachers, but also early childhood and higher ed, the two-year institution, higher ed institutions. So Education Minnesota is really concerned, certainly about funding, but I do want to focus on the policies, as this is a policy committee. And a number of those policies end up starting here in your committee and end up going through the funding committee. So let's talk first about all-day, every-day kindergarten. It's certainly a policy that Education Minnesota supports. And when we talk about student achievement and closing the achievement gap, we think that that's a very good place to start. Also, with...
Ms. Holzweiger, excuse me. Do you have a handout that you would
sorry.
Like to provide?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Madam Chair, I do. Thank you.
Please continue.
Also, we're concerned about having funding that is sustainable, predictable, sufficient, and equitable. But along with that, the governor's task force is going to be talking about, has some recommendations around integration, and I think that that's a policy that you will end up talking about. We want to make sure that integration policy helps kids achieve and that we help close the achievement gap in that manner, too. To close the achievement gap, we have a number of thoughts and ways that we think that laws should be passed to help address that issue. Early childhood should be expanded in the public schools so that we have more early access to early childhood. Of course, then that fits in with the all-day kindergarten that I just spoke about. We feel that there should be more community involvement and parental involvement in our schools so that there is a more serious dialogue about the student, their achievement, their goals, and bringing in businesses and communities to be a part of the school community. Educators need training, planning time, and support to make sure that they address the issues of racial and socioeconomic equity and using research best practices. And that fits right in with a policy that was passed in 2011. In 2011, the legislature passed and was signed into law a teacher evaluation bill. And I want to make it very clear that Education Minnesota is embracing teacher evaluation, and we're trying to do our very best to make that evaluation law work. But in order to work, the policy that was passed does need to be funded. And so I think it's important for you to talk about that policy. And as I said, Education Minnesota is embracing that because we want the best teachers in front of students. Minnesota already has great teachers, but we want them to be even better. So let me talk a little bit about the policies in the teacher evaluation law. One of the requirements is to have qualified and trained evaluators in the system evaluating teachers. But there is a lot of work that needs to be done to meet that threshold of qualified and trained evaluators. In addition, those evaluators are supposed to be using the standards of effective practice, which we do not believe that all evaluators can do that at this point. The law also requires peer review and professional learning communities. Some districts are doing that quite well. Some districts have a long ways to go to do that correctly and to improve instruction. As I said, we want the very best teachers in front of our kids. And two years ago, the staff development money was the eliminate the 50-25-25 distribution that gets the money to the site was taken away. So in the evaluation law, there's a teacher improvement process that a teacher must enter if they are not meeting the goals and the standards that they are supposed to meet through the standards of effective practice. But there is no support at the building level. And if we really want to support teachers who are struggling, then we need to have the policies, the programs, and the funding in place. Because if a teacher does not meet the goals as established by the administrator within the timeline established by the administrator, the teacher can be terminated, put on leave, or anything the administrator deems appropriate. Our members are ready, eager, and willing to have quality evaluation systems that are fair and that give them the support that they need to improve their instruction. So I'd like you to think about what has happened with staff development. Think about the policies and how we can make them work within teacher evaluation, and so that we can have, as Education Minnesota wants, the very best teachers in front of our students.
Thank you very much. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Alzweiger, I know that everyone in this room realizes how important effective teachers are, and we know that an effective teacher, actually we know the number one in-school variable for student achievement is a high-quality teacher, and so I really appreciate you reinforcing that, and I think that's something we all should work toward. It is the one thing. We don't control many things, but we do have great control over the quality of our teachers. My question has to do with the staff development piece, and we know how important those highly effective teachers are and also how important staff development is in that regard. But my question is, you mentioned that staff development dollars were taken away, and I just would like you to elaborate on that. I do not believe that there were any dollars that were taken away. What really was taken away was a mandate. The mandate saying that school districts had to use a certain amount of their dollars, which I think was 2%, for staff development. But I don't believe there's anything in statute that would prohibit schools from giving 2%, using 2% of their budget or 10% of their budget for staff development. And so I just think it's important to clarify that, and I maybe have some other comments to add, but there is no reduction in staff development dollars at all. Only the mandate. And so we would hope our local school districts would know what's best for their teachers and how to spend that money. I guess it's more of a comment, but.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And Ms. Alzweiger, I want to make sure that members know that we're going to have a hearing devoted to this, and these questions are going to be answered. So this is a core issue, as you know, and Education Minnesota knows quite well that, you know, every member in this committee is very interested, and they have very great ideas as to how we can do this. This might be a good time for me to let, I think all members know this, but the public know that in this committee we're going to assign working committees to work on the core issues that you're going to hear in these presentations. The issues that you are hearing is that we need innovation and that early childhood education and K-12 post-secondary offer that opportunity. And we're going to have a committee, two working groups that are going to be working on those issues, really looking at how early childhood education is being funded, what are the policies that guide that kind of quality and outcome. And we have members who are going to be directing those committees. We will announce that soon because the members who are going to be leading this effort are going to be recruiting from this group to move in that direction. The same thing with the K-12 post-secondary experience. Many members are very excited. We have fantastic ideas that are coming our way, and we're going to have members from both Minority Caucus and the Majority Caucus leading those efforts. And then the issue of accountability is clear in terms of how we look at accountability and performance and accountability in three areas. Students, we want to know how our students are doing and whether or not we're testing and assessing properly. We want to know how our teachers are doing, and this entire conversation about evaluation is going to be part of that, and principals, because we need to support teachers and we need to figure out. So, it's, you know, these are the individuals that are in the classroom, that are in the schools. We can talk about administrators and others, but I think those are the three, you know, principal communities that we need to serve, our students, our teachers, our principals, and we will be announcing soon who are the members of the working committees who are going to be leading on these efforts. Any other questions? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Alzweiger. And just to elaborate on the point that Senator Nelson made, We did not, in fact, get rid of the staff development dollars. We got rid of the 50-20-25-25 mandate. And actually, as you know, Ms. Allswager, the districts have a staff development committee of which by law is mandated to make up a majority of teachers. So I would actually argue that the staff development money is actually in more control by teachers rather than less. But that's actually not what I'm going to ask you about. I'm actually particularly interested, as you know, in the teacher evaluation development and what rural districts in particular have done to ensure that maybe they can work together or share services amongst the districts to make sure that we have enough trained evaluators in outstate Minnesota. And that's a critical issue, I think, in terms of implementation. And I think you're 100% right about the fact that that really is one of the foundational issues to making sure that the system is effective. And some of these districts have limited amount of administrators and therefore will have a limited capacity to train. Is there any work amongst the locals and the districts in partnership to make sure that maybe we can share evaluation staff or team up with some of these smaller districts in outstate Minnesota?
Ms. Allswager, if you could quickly address both the questions from Senator Nelson and Senator Peterson. But again, we will come back to this issue and we will hear more detail. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson and Senator Nelson, I believe that districts right now are working on in talking about the teacher evaluation system and figuring out how to implement in their local district. I think that it is difficult at this time because it's quite early. They're waiting to see what the state model will look like, but they are eager and willing to explore every option. And if you've got ideas, we're anxious to hear them. In terms of the staff development, very quickly, to make sure that my comments were understood, the 2% staff development set aside is still there. That has not been taken away. But what has changed is the elimination of the money that goes to the school site. That is, there is no more a requirement. And there used to be a majority of teachers at that site that would have that would make decisions about that money. So that if there is a particular teacher who is struggling, we would like that building to make some decisions about getting some resources to that teacher.
Thank you. And Senator Clausen, I'm just thinking that this might be, an issue that we might need to incorporate into figuring out, how these actual formulas and the mandates actually result in terms of, the funding. So what does that mean? I think that might be a good clarification for that committee to resolve for the rest of committee members. Mr. Gary Moroso from the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, we'll have a handout that's coming your way. When you do receive the handout, we have our funding priorities on the left side of the handout, which we discussed in Senator Wieger's committee earlier. And I just want to share a few thoughts on our education policy issues. Do want to start off with one that we did have under funding, but we had a hearing this morning, and that's regarding the all-day kindergarten program. Our association, which is made up of over 500 active members.
Mr. Amoroso, I'm sorry. For the record, again, you need to say your name and the institution.
Absolutely.
You represent.
I apologize, Madam Chair. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Thank you.
And as I was mentioning, our association has over 500 active members. We have about 99% of the superintendents in the state, many directors of curriculum and instruction, special education directors and some coordinators, as well as other central office administrators. And so we have members that reside within all of your districts. As we mentioned, all-day K is a policy issue that we're hoping you give serious consideration to. We believe the research is clear that all-day K can have and does have an impact on the academic achievement levels of our students and can be a way to hopefully have them all reading by third grade and have them off to a great start within their educational careers. I'd like to then shift over to the policy side of our platform. We are excited about the fact that we'll be working with our legislators and our governor about a bullying policy. We believe that every child deserves the right to be in a safe environment. We know that when a child feels safe and secure, that they are more probable to learn than if they are uncomfortable in their environment. So we embrace the concept of looking at our current statute and creating a statute, I think you heard earlier in some conversations, that will provide programming for students, provide programs that districts can access, can use to better work with students in a proactive fashion to eliminate this type of behavior. We also hope that whatever reporting type systems are required, because we understand that there's an accountability here and we embrace that, is that the accountability systems are one that do not become onerous, do not become burdensome, and then the focus isn't on working with our children and working with our staffs, but the focus becomes making sure we get the report done on time so that, you know, we can do what we need to do. So we look forward to the conversations with the House and the Senate and the governor to craft a plan that truly will work on behalf of all children in our state. The second area that we have some concerns about is the current statute regarding the math grad test. We believe that the current statute that calls for the children to pass the portion of the grad test at a certain level to determine graduation is not truly you know, bound in research, that the one snapshot in time decision on whether a child graduates or not really is not what we believe is a good system. Research does not support that. We embrace the concept of assessment. We embrace the concept of looking at a series of different measures, whether it be authentic type assessments, whether it be a standardized model, but a series of measures over time that will give you a broader picture of a child's academic achievement levels. Our platform was written prior to the working group that the commissioner had coming forward with their recommendations, and we would certainly support having conversations regarding those recommendations and looking at different avenues of how we can truly identify if a child is learning and at what levels they're learning. Our third area, this was more of an affirmation. In the past, the House and the Senate and the governor eliminated the January 15th artificial deadline for contract settlements. We embrace the continued elimination of that guideline and of that deadline. One of our concerns is if that deadline is reinstated. By example, you have a year where, and I understand it's just a proposal, but that the governor's budget is looking at an additional $52 next year in the formula, by example. If we were to have the deadline, and if the penalty were to be the same penalty that was in force prior to the elimination of the deadline, school districts would bear the responsibility of paying a penalty of $25 per pupil, even though it takes two parties to come up with a negotiated agreement, only one party suffers the financial consequence. And we believe in the end that can have a negative impact on children when those $25 per pupil unit are then taken away from the district. So we're hoping that that deadline does not return. And lastly, it's a topic that may not be on the front burner for our association this year, but our members felt that as a result of us having it on our platform last year, we wanted to continue the conversation looking towards maybe a year from now. We believe we need some flexibility when it comes to how school districts either become more efficient in how they run programming or in the case of needing to reduce staff, have areas that we can use decisions not based just on seniority, but also based on who do we believe will do the best for our children. There are areas that we invest money in with our, even more money than in other positions with our professionals. Some of the areas by example, and this was not an all-inclusive list, it's just an example, STEM programs, AP programs, IB programs, you've got all of your arts programs. We'd like to have a conversation. We'd love it to be a bipartisan conversation. We'd like to have a conversation with our colleagues in our other educational organizations. But is there a way to begin to open the door to look at some flexibility for districts when it comes to reduction in staff or when it comes to being more efficient in how we use staff. With that, Madam Chair, I greatly appreciate the opportunity to be present today, and also do want to put in a plug for the Principals Academy. We were one of the organizations that have worked closely with the University of Minnesota to help craft the program that you will be hearing about in this coming session. And once again, thank you.
Thank you so much. Questions, members? Thank you for your testimony. Can't see from here, Mr. Cronquist. The Association of Metro School Districts. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I do have a handout. My name is Scott Cronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and we represent 37 school districts in the metropolitan area. In addition to that, the three intermediate school districts that are in the metro area and the three integration districts in the metro area. Just about one half of the students in the state of Minnesota are enrolled in one of our member school districts. Madam Chair, members, being handed out is our legislative platform, and it includes obviously both funding and policy issues, but I will just try to stick to a few of the policy issues, and I will really try to keep it brief because a number of the issues really have already been touched on by some of the previous testifiers. One I would like to focus on would be on page 3 of our platform, and it's the one dealing with creating integrated and equitable learning environments. That, of course, is a funding and policy issue, but there is significant policy issues in there that we hope the committee will wrestle with. And we think you actually have an excellent report to start from. There was a task force that met over the last year, the Integration Revenue Replacement Advisory Task Force. That report is available on the Department of Education website. We also have it posted on our website at amsd.org. If you haven't seen that, I would encourage you to read that report. Offers some detailed recommendations on clarifying how integration revenue can be used. Really touches on making sure that we continue to have state law that prohibits intentional segregation and would continue to provide incentives for school districts to create integrated and equitable learning environments, and a number of other recommendations that we think, again, give you a great basis to work from. From there, I'm going to turn over to the back of the platform, again, trying to keep my testimony brief here, and I know you don't have a lot of time today. A number of testifiers have already talked about mandates, and there has been some great progress made over the last several years in reducing unfunded mandates, and so we're hoping that we can keep going that direction and not reverse course and bring back some of the mandates that have been repealed. You'll notice the first bullet under that category, an issue that's been around for quite some time for those of you that have served in previous sessions, and one that Senator Franzen's quite familiar with, actually. It's been in the news a lot lately. And that's allowing a school district to start before Labor Day. And again, the school district in question, we think that's exactly where that conversation should be taking place, at the local level. They've had a great, healthy discussion with the parents and the school board and students and staff, and that local school board has made a decision. And we think every school district in the state should have the ability to make that decision that's best for their students surrounding their school calendar. Finally, the last item you'll see on our platform there is reforming the assessment and accountability system. Here again, there was excellent work done by a task force on assessments and accountability. And our association really supports that the work that was done in that task force. We think we need to move away from the grad test, the single point in time test, and move towards a broader measure of student accountability, really tracking whether or not students are on track for college readiness earlier and being able to make adjustments much earlier if they're not on track. And so, again, I would refer you to that task force report. Is also, of course, available on the department website and the AMSD website. I'll stop there, Madam Chair, but we'll look forward to working with you and the members throughout the session.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Madam Chair, Mr. Cronquist, I attended a meeting of AMSD early in January, and there was kind of a straw poll that was taken by the superintendents there about the payback for the shift. Could you comment on the position of your organization on that, please, and also kind of go into how that was came to be, I guess. What's the thinking behind it, in other words?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Cronquist.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Klassen, and thank you. Yeah, that's one of those issues that clearly is both policy and funding. And you'll see in our platform, our position is that we should make new investments a priority and repay the shift over time using current law. And so I think most of you know that we do have a provision in law that says that if either the two forecasts that are done each year show a surplus, that money then now automatically goes towards repaying the shift. And in fact, over the last year, we have substantially repaid that school aid payment shift. We've gone from what was originally a 60-40 configuration all the way up now to an 82.5-17.5. And again, if this next forecast in February shows additional surplus, we'll make even more progress. But the reality is that once that shift is repaid, that's money coming to school districts that they already have coming to them. I mean, they're already banking on that. That's already in their budget. It's not new money. It's not a penny of new money. And so it's much more important that, in fact, we make some new investments, whether it's on the formula or full-day kindergarten or special education. Any of those areas would be a much higher priority for school districts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair members.
Thank you very much. Ms. Gilbert from St. Paul Schools. Welcome to the Education Committee. I have a handout.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert, and I'm the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public Schools. And some of you might also recognize my document, but I will just try and highlight some of the policy areas today. For those of you who weren't on the Finance Committee, the first side provides some basic demographic information and some of the outcomes that we track. And these outcomes are just a few of the data things that we track all year long. We have a data center on our website, and I would encourage any of you to look and see what kind of dashboards we keep track of, starting in elementary school right through high school. Again, I would really like to thank the centers this morning for their all-day K presentation. We are supporting that. Mr. Kroonquist said, we are supporting the recommendations of the Integration Task Force specifically related to the uses of integration dollars. I hate to admit how long I've been around here, but when the integration funding was first passed in 1987, it was two pots of money. One of them was for the extra cost of integration programs to provide magnet schools so that students within the public school system had some choices or other opportunities to attend a magnet school that had a thematic, and we have language immersion, aerospace, Montessori, gifted and talented. And then the second pot was to provide for the transportation costs to make sure that those kids could get transported from their neighborhood attendance area somewhere else in the district so they could take advantage of those magnet opportunities. So we feel strongly we have a very robust choice system in our state and in our school district, and our parents actually are at the Parents Fair this weekend and looking very seriously about what schools that they want and think that their children would do the best at, and we want to ensure that we maintain that opportunity for them to choose under our choice system within the public school system as well. And right now, a charter school student can get transported to any school in the district, and a private school student can get transported. And we just want to make sure that under the new rules that our St. Paul Public School parents who choose to attend a school outside of their neighborhood attendance area have that option as well under the integration design that you have. We are supportive of, as many of you have said before, anything that creates barriers to increase high school graduation. Senator Wieger in the past has been our champion of increasing the compulsory attendance age, and that has been fraught with you would think that it would be a general thing that most people would support, you know, that having that as a minimum requirement in our state would be a good idea, but it actually has been quite controversial. And so I would even maybe make a stab at it this year that we increase it to 17 and see if we have some opportunity to it. I think it helps parents. You know, I know it helps me when my kids didn't want to wear their seatbelt to say, you know, it's the state law, or you can't stay out past midnight because there's a curfew. in place, and you will get picked up by the cops. We have a wonderful truancy prevention program that really does. We're not interested in putting kids in jail if they don't, you know, finish school, but sometimes you need some extra tools to make sure that kids stay on track and get back into an appropriate place, appropriate opportunity for them to complete their high school graduation. We also know in our case that we have kids that are dropping out because of the high stakes testing, and we support eliminating them and using other multiple measures. We're supporting some incentives, as the chamber talked about, for kids to have some opportunities, possibly to achieve a certificate during high school, some progress toward a degree, or even possibly an associate degree when they complete high school. And we have many opportunities there as well. Another thing I want to touch on briefly is we have a lot of new students that come to our district every year. In fact, when I took a look at the data, I almost fell off my chair. In the last 4 years, we had 5,639 new 7th through 12th graders that did not speak English when they enrolled in our school district. I'll say that again, 5,639 students that were new to our district, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. So when this committee looks at graduation rates and holding schools accountable, I would urge the committee also to consider looking at something in addition to the four-year graduation, right, because that's still a valid measure, to look at the number of students that actually continue on with their education. Our dropout rate in St. Paul has dropped from 11% to 6% in the last 5 years, which is pretty much on par with the state, actually. So we have kids that aren't graduating in 4 years, but they're staying with us longer because they're brand-new immigrants. They come with no education. Often there's no literacy even in their native language. In fact, and we have a whole other group of students that have been over here from time to time from the LEAP Academy who would like to actually stay in high school longer from 21 to 23. And we think that that would be an opportunity that you'd like to consider as well for students who are highly motivated that are new immigrants, that they would be able to complete their diploma. We have some modest recommendations for providing some transportation to homeless students, and we think that that will not have a cost. Right now, under the McKinney-Vento Act, which is a federal act, you can transport a student if they've had a previous home school, but because kindergartners don't have a previous home school, some families are being forced to split up their kindergartners from their other kids under that provision, and we'd like to keep those families together, and they would like to stay together, too, in a school. And we would like to look at, and this is also revenue neutral, to figure out a way where if with creative people who are willing to move forward with maximizing our federal medical assistance revenue for reimbursing schools for a lot of the mental health services that they're currently providing in their schools.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Gilbert? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Gilbert. I have a full appreciation for the unique student makeup that St. Paul Public Schools has, and I'm particularly interested in the bullet point you have here on keeping kids in school if they want to and are on track to graduate by age 23. And I'm just curious if that proposal comes from somewhere else in the country. Is there any research or where did that come from, I guess, the genesis of that idea?
Ms. Gilbert.
This, Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, this is actually an initiative that came from the students over at the LEAP Academy. And Wellstone has the same thing. As part of their high school curriculum, they started working at a public policy issue, and these kids are so highly motivated, and they feel that they value the diploma over getting a GED, and they feel that they need the additional years so that they're more prepared for post-secondary. And so there's kids that are willing to go to school full-time. They want to stay in school, and they're still working, and some of them are even supporting young children. And we're trying to be as creative as possible with those kids. In fact, we had 12 students over at the LEAP Academy last week that took the CLEP test at Century College for Spanish, and 11 of the 12 passed. I mean, so we are really trying to be creative in how we can give those kids some opportunities to earn some college credit, even, you know, as they are in a special program. The state used to have a high school diploma program, and it got rolled into the ABE program years ago. And but because of all the new immigrants recently that are coming to us with such limited English, I mean, most of the new, the 5,600 kids that I was talking to you about, most of them are level one ELL speakers. Sometimes in the when there's an early wave of immigration, you get families of professionals that have had some education in their communities. Most recently, though, we've had mostly people that are coming straight from camps. And so it's a completely different situation for those kids is trying to get them up to speed on some of their high school graduation. What we were trying to do with the proposal that we've had is craft it so it's narrow, you know, so that's kids that come to us as secondary students and kids that also have an opportunity to actually complete their high school diploma by the time they're 23. Frankly, it's not all kids can do that. If they come to us as seniors, for example, they're not going to be able to learn English and finish all their high school requirements by the time they're 23. That would be impossible. We have to think of another opportunity for them. We're trying to carve out an exception for just a small group of very highly motivated people who are willing to stick at it, stick with school until they're 23.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Ms. Armasa, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Buenas tardes.
Gracias.
And committee members, I thank you for the opportunity to be before you. My name is Jan Ormasa, and I am the Executive Director for the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. Our organization serves about 420 administrators whose mission is to build leadership to advocate on behalf of students and children and their families with disabilities. So today I would like to take this opportunity and thank you for the opportunity to share three major areas of emphasis that we would really like your consideration. We are continuing to focus on improving student outcomes through evidence-based practices. And for us, this means us continuing to learn the system of accountability towards data-driven decision-making, and that we also strongly recommend a support for staff development to help staff learn instructional learning practices that are evidence-based from early childhood all the way to age 21. That would have the greatest impact on the outcome for our students. MACE also recommends a renewed focus on the interagency coordination mandates. In addition, we are really looking at the whole system of supporting the multi-tiered systems of support, which is really known as RTI and positive behavior intervention systems. We really believe the importance of this is to dedicate having our professionals learn the techniques, and we also are all recommending and supporting centers of excellence that would support the staff development in this arena to build the skills for being able to implement and scale up the multiple-tiered system of interventions and be able to move forward. And as you know, that the PBIS system is really focused on creating systems and a positive culture and climate within schools and also towards violence prevention, specifically as we're hearing a lot about Sandy Hook Elementary and we're very concerned about what's happening with mental health. The tiered system of support also begins to look at mental health issues. We are wanting to look at the SLD criteria and wanting that to be more open-ended so that we can intervene sooner and quicker with our students prior to their beginning to not function. So we also are looking at recommending an integrated and unified system of academic and behavioral supports, and by this we're really focusing on an recommendation for implementation of a comprehensive coordinated support system for students with mental illness and needing to figure out those ways to address with school-linked services and funding in that arena. The other area that presents a challenge to us is serving and finding good, high-quality staff for special education, both special education teachers, speech and language pathologists, as well as related service providers. As you know, we are experiencing a dearth of having speech pathologists, particularly in our outstate areas, and we're needing to think of new and creative ways to begin to address that issue. And we would seek flexibility in the licensure with community variances so that we would be able to address that issue. We would also ask that licensure that comes in from outstate also be recognized. And we're also asking that we would be looking at granting a window of a year for staff to pass the Minnesota test for the required licensure. We're recommending also, in addition, to looking at the licensure for and the experiences of our school social workers, our school psychologists, and our speech pathologists that can be addressed towards becoming directors of special education so that we are not limiting our pool of who can become the next leaders in our area. And the other area that we also would like to focus on and that we would hope to be having lots of conversation about would be around needing really the special education funding. We really strongly believe in adequate, equitable, predictable, and sustainable funding. And as you know, that this is a huge concern for us because there's a partnership between the federal, the state, and the local dollars really to fund special education for our students. The federal government, as you know, has not held their 40% promise. The state has prorated us over the past decade, and we're looking at the local impact in the cross subsidies, which is a huge impact to local school districts and needing to address that dilemma for the local school districts. So we thank you for this opportunity to share with you our interests and concerns in working with you.
Thank you, Ms. Rosa. Any questions? Yes, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Ms. Ormosa. I appreciate all the work you do with children and youth with disabilities. And I just had a comment and some feedback that I've received over the years is with teachers' frustration with paperwork and also the constant changes that come in requirements that they have to do. Do you see anything that we should be doing or the department should be doing in terms of we still want accountability, but yet I've constantly heard the paperwork really keeps them from working with children as much as they'd like to. Any comments, thoughts?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dahl. Paperwork is really impacting our field dramatically. I think we are real. If you know the mission of the staff that come into this field, they are mission-driven to serve the students and their families. And so they are striving to figure out how to do that and to have more of their time and energy go into that. There's a dilemma with the issue of paperwork and with what I honestly would like to put forward with you, compliance. Because we do strongly believe that we need to be held to compliance. But part of the issue is the level of compliance and the rigor of that compliance in how that is being asked of staff to continue revising things that they have presented. And so is there a way to accommodate both the reduction of the paperwork and also to look at the compliance so that we are still being held accountable to the standards that we want to be held accountable and meeting the needs of those IEPs, those individual education plans for our students. So I know there's before us a $1.8 million proposal by the governor to look at that online package. I spoke yesterday with Barbara Case about looking at the issue, and the department is listening very carefully to the feedback that you yourself have heard, Senator Dahl, and is trying to figure out how to put forward a model set of forms because their belief is that they also see that what's happening in the field is that vendors are creating additional forms for addressing needs that then they're putting out more than they need to do, and that's becoming sort of a part of the process that they've observed in the monitoring.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the presentation. I'm not sure if this is the right time, but maybe a different time, or maybe even today. That is an absolute necessity that we allow our teachers to spend more time teaching students as opposed to filling out forms. I'm a former special ed teacher, and that is true. The estimates are 20% of at least that's when I was in teaching, 20% of our time would be spent filling out forms instead of teaching children. And teachers in my district have, special ed teachers in my district have told me about some of these online suites, packages of forms, and it sounds like that should be a good thing to be able to streamline that. But at some point I'd want to know, are these packages of forms from the Department of Ed, or are they from these independent vendors? Some of my teachers have been talking about how some of the forms they have to fill out, even on the online suite of forms, are just totally irrelevant. Do we really need to have a kindergartner's post-college plan? That just seemed to be kind of a ridiculous thing. She literally had to fill out a form saying some sort of waiver why this particular kindergartner did not need to have the post-high school college plan. And so as this moves forward, I would want to encourage that the department, or maybe there's a task force looking at this. Really, we need to have the voice of our special education teachers well represented on that task force, so we can eliminate some of these, even though we're moving in the right direction, eliminate some of these unnecessary forms. And so, Madam Chair, absolutely. I don't know if that's another issue for another day.
Absolutely, perhaps. Absolutely, Senator Nelson. I think there is a great desire in this committee as well to look at simplification. You know, what are these mandates that we need to review? And we met yesterday with our research staff to really look into, you know, that information that is out there, providing that to the members so that we can begin to look at that. So this might be an area where we might have to set up a meeting with you, Ms. Ormaza, and other members to pursue that. That would be great. Thank you, Senator Nelson. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Next we have Mr. Bartolomeo. He's here. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And just as brief background, our members are the chief executives of Minnesota's larger employers, companies like 3M, General Mills, the Mayo Clinic. And together they employ about 400,000 Minnesotans and 2 million people worldwide. While our handout provides more detail about our recommendations, in the interest of the two-minute timeline, I'll just briefly highlight three primary issues with the understanding that there's obviously a little bit more detail behind each of these, and the other items that are in this handout are also very important to us, things like early education and further development of the state's educational data system. With that, our first set of recommendations is to help ensure all students graduate from high school prepared for a successful transition into post-secondary education. Specifically, we support replacing Minnesota's current high school exams with the Explore, Plan, and ACT exams. In addition, to earn a diploma, students must be expected to achieve at a level which indicates they're prepared for at least a certificate-level program through a Minsku institution. With 70% of all jobs in Minnesota requiring completion of some post-secondary education by 2018, when today's seventh graders graduate from high school, we need to help ensure all students are college ready, not just college eligible. Our next two recommendations are the implementation of the state's new teacher and principal evaluation programs, and as the data from those evaluations becomes more available, using those results to help better match teacher skills with student needs. Historically, Minnesota's students and schools have performed well. That said, other states and countries are working hard to improve their education systems to be more successful in our global economy. For Minnesota, creating a stronger link between high school graduation and post-secondary admission requirements and further developing the skills of our educators are two key steps to help make sure Minnesota students can succeed in the global marketplace. We share your sense of urgency for not only eliminating our deep and persistent achievement gaps, but also raising the performance of all students, and we look forward to the opportunity to continue to work with you throughout the legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Next, we have Brian Sweeney from Charter School Partnership. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brian Sweeney, and I am Director of External Affairs for Charter School Partners. We are a four-year-old nonprofit charter support organization, and our mission is to increase the number of high-performing charter schools in Minnesota and to increase the number of students of poverty being served by high-performing charter schools in Minnesota. We call our initiative that you have coming to you there Charters 2.0. We feel that the charter movement needs to go to the next place, to a next generation of not just about, can't be just about choice or innovation, but it needs to be about quality and academic quality. High-performing charters today is one of the only proof points that are closing the achievement gap. We have several high-performing charters here in the Twin Cities, Harvest, Best Mastery, Hiawatha Academy in Minneapolis, Global Academy, Columbia Heights, and several others. So that is our focus. Each year, the Star Tribune does a beating the odds chart talking about which are the schools that are closing the achievement gap. For the last 3 years, 8 of 10 of those schools have been charter schools. And if you look from city to city in Denver, the number is 13 of the top 15 public schools are charters, closing the gap, as well as Chicago and other cities. Charter School Partners does three things. One, we are incubators of charter schools. We help start charter schools. And we're very deep in this work. We're working with a dozen schools right now, some that are organically coming from the community. Others are part of our fellowship program. We actually have a 2-year fellowship for school leaders that lead up to the opening of their own charter schools. Presently, we have 5 fellows that will be opening charter schools in the next 2 years, and it is very, very exciting work. The second thing we do is we work with a new community of what we call Community of Charter School Excellence of 28 charter schools in the metro area, and our focus is in the metro area. We are not outstate. And we, the 28 schools, we call our Good to Great initiative. We get together on a very regular basis, exchange best practices, and work together to make good schools great. So that is our focus. The third effort that we do is advocacy and policy, and that's what we're talking about here today. But it is a reflection of the work that we do. And on the first page, we talk about the 4 major goals of Charters 2.0. Call for the financing and the creation of the growth of high-performing charters, which include fast-tracking those successful charters, particularly serving low-income kids. We talk about improving the quality or the teacher talent pipeline to, again, focus on charter schools that serve low-income students. 3, talk about greater charter authorizer accountability. And one of our provisions, and a couple of other organizations have talked about it here, is the closing down of chronically low-performing charter schools. We feel that is an important thing. We really feel deeply about the original contract or charter between the state and the individual charter schools, which says for greater autonomy, we need greater accountability. So that's an initiative we're going to bring forward in the coming weeks and months. And finally, to improve student achievement through greater district charter collaboration. We work very closely with MPS and on several interesting conversations, and we were very supportive of the district charter collaborative bill that passed last year, and many of you supported. So those are our policy framework, and specifically how that translates into specific policy is ensuring that the funding for new charters allows the new charter to get up and going. So we're asking for a 90-10 holdback for the first several years of a new charter school. We are working with our partner, Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Eugene Piccolo is back here to the right. And there is a proposal that's coming together that is calling for a letter of aid anticipation from the state for charter schools. We did a joint study with MACS, Minnesota Association of Charter Schools, and the Nonprofit Assistance Fund, which identified how charters are adversely hit by the holdback because they can't get loans for 1%. They have to go out on the market, and it's 5, 7, 9, and sometimes more percent to get loans for the holdback, and we don't feel that's appropriate use of state dollars.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
so,
Mr. Sweeney.
Thank you.
Any questions from members? Thank you. Next is Ms. Ciccone, Mary Ciccone from Parents United. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. I'm Mary Ciccone with Parents United for Public Schools. I'm pleased to have a couple of minutes to introduce our group to you. First off, we are Minnesota-born. We are parent-led, and we are statewide. We are a nonprofit who's focused on a great system of public schools, E16, in the state of Minnesota. Because we believe that nonprofits that come in front of you advocating for policy, you should know where their funding comes from. We're very proud to say half of our operating funds come from the parents, and the other half come from foundations around the idea of civic engagement. Purposefully, we have a board that is geographically, racially, and economically diverse, and they are actually each making individual appointments with you so that they have an opportunity to introduce the organization to you as well. 10 years ago, it became apparent that more and more of the decisions that were really impacting local public schools were being decided in this arena. And so a very strategic decision was made that Minnesota needed an organization to help parents understand the political arena and also the proposed legislation that comes forward. They needed that information in order to have really good conversations with you and with the leaders of their schools. That is our role. Using the filter of how does that policy increase achievement, we try and track proposed legislation and the issues and the various educational events around them. And then we provide that information weekly to a database of 5,000 parents in 134 legislative districts all across the state. On top of that, we have presented over 400 times from one end of the state to the other a session on how schools are funded and governed in what we call parent ease. We sit on panels. We are sought after with parent questions and media to try and explain complex issues to them so that they, again, can be part of the broader conversation. We're in multiple coalitions, the most obviously from many minds. The one that is most intriguing right now is an alignment that's focused on racial equity in our public schools. We also believe that parents need to have a valid voice at the state level in task forces. So this last year, we've had parents on teacher evaluation, the funding working group, the teacher licensure, assessment and accountability, No Child Left Behind waiver, and we're working with the Minnesota Department of Education right now to improve family partnerships in schools. What you have in front of you, we don't have an agenda. We don't put a policy or priority agenda together. Instead, we ask that any policy that come forward be vetted, and vetted in the research and the evidence of its efficacy. And I will be working, I'll be here tracking and trying to let our folks know what's happening here. We try and provide a state perspective to locals and help them provide their perspective to you.
Thank you, Ms. Ciccone. I wanted you to be here and to provide testimony, although I know that that the organization does not pursue specific legislation. But there is something very intriguing to me, which is the idea that we have PTA and parents groups that are working in the school buildings, yet their voice is not here. And then we have parents who have a voice here, are not in PTA and are not working in the schools. And I had a recent meeting with a large group of Latino parents who are organizing in Minneapolis. And part of what they feel is that because of their level of education and language barrier, they feel excluded from the conversations in the district and here. And so they feel very strongly that they need this broker, this person that will that needs to be with them and needs to be working here. I think that when we, you know, we are constantly talking about parent involvement here, parent responsibility, parent accountability, yet we don't have a model in our school system that really empowers parents to be that voice, to provide that accountability. I am very interested. It just so happened that in many countries around the world, we do have a component that really helps parents understand, you know, how this whole system works. So when we say something in a hearing like there are some children in Minneapolis who receive $23,000 to go to school, parents go like, well, if I have $23,000, I need to know how I'm going to use that money, right? So there is an issue there of really understanding what that means. Parents need to understand what that means and how that investment works, and whether or not that is true and is real, because those statements are usually made here, and people really don't know really what that means. So I would like to encourage you to meet with us. I am particularly interested in meeting with you to talk about parent involvement and learning from districts who are doing meaningful work with parents and how that's working for their kids, especially those who serve large populations that are low income and immigrant children. Thank you. Next, we have Ms. Kelleher, Grace Kelleher from the School Board Association.
Surprise!
Okay. Ms. Kelleher is not here.
Yeah.
Well, welcome.
No. Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I want to thank you for having us in today, and I don't have a document prepared for you, but based on the number that's before you, I think what we'll do is it may stick out a little bit more if we send it to you electronically. So I apologize for that piece. And, you know, School Board Association that represents all of our public school districts and school board members who govern and set the vision for each of their local school districts and our elected members as well. And so focusing on the policy issues, I think one of the things that's important to understand, I think, is that many times when policies are discussed, I think we get them mixed up with finance issues, and I think it's really hard as you progress through the session here to differentiate or make sure you differentiate that there is what are the cost factors that go along with the policy implications. And that doesn't matter. I mean, all you have to do is look at the teacher evaluation model piece that's existing out there, and the evidence is there for you. So some of the issues that we're focusing on And again, some of these have been repeated, but I think the school start date issue is one of those issues that locally elected school boards believe that having a choice in that matter matters. Setting the start and end dates for the school year certainly can impact student achievement, and I think most of our boards would greatly appreciate that flexibility. Secondly is the issue of the high-stakes assessment, the grad assessment. I think we participated in that working group, and the provisions within that working group would be something our group would support. We don't believe the benefits of high-stakes assessments or one high-stake assessment should determine a student's graduation. So I think we're open to the discussion about trying to find alternative paths there that would look at that. Thirdly, is to recognize the policy provisions that exist for school board members. School board members govern through policies. And the important piece is that if there are state policies or state laws that are changed, I think it's important to understand that school board members need to have some flexibility to amend, adapt, model it, make it work for their local school district. So I think that's an important piece to consider as well. And as an employer, one of the issues that we've learned from our school districts around the state is the issue of hiring teachers. And one of the issues relates to the high stakes assessment for the basic skills test for teachers. We think there's a provision that especially in those instances where we have teachers who come from out of state or in teachers who are in high demand areas who have not quite passed the basic skills portion of the test, that there may be an option to provide a little bit of an exemption for that, to allow that teacher who the school district hired to be in the classroom instead of hiring a temporary substitute waiting for those test results to come back. I think also you alluded to the issue of the special ed reform pieces. We know the legislative auditor is busy working on that issue, looking at paperwork issues, other issues related to the federal and state compliance on special ed. I think that would be an opportunity to look at some of those things that perhaps can provide more efficiency for our teachers and our administrators in providing those services to our special needs students. And so I think that the legislative auditor is well-respected and may offer an opportunity for greater discussion. So I will close it there and be available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. I want to make sure that you do send us a handout. This exercise is very important. As the members can see, a lot of you have talked about, you know, teacher evaluation, all, you know, the themes repeat themselves.
Sure.
So this is what is going to guide the conversation here in this committee, because clearly you are the experts who are dealing, you know, with teachers, with students every day, who hear from teachers and from the different school districts. So this is very important. So make sure that you send that to us.
Madam Chair, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next in the agenda is Mr. Gradwell from Minneapolis Schools. I don't know if Jim is here. Okay. And finally, we have Mr. Daniel Evans from Child Care Works. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Evans.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Daniel Evans, and I am the policy director for Child Care Works. We have a couple priorities I'd like to discuss today. We are a statewide child care advocacy organization whose mission is to achieve and sustain affordable, high-quality child care options for families and communities. We have parents and child care providers in our nonprofit network that we talk to frequently. We have two main concerns this session. The first is continuity of care. We want to assure that children have access to, on a continuous basis, to reliable child care environments. We know that having predictable, positive interactions with adults helps children in their development process and helps them grow and become ready for school. Our second point that we would like to see is we'd like to see more development of the Parent Aware system. The Parent Aware system is coming into place to make sure that child care environments are attaining higher quality in their pursuits and making sure that they're considering quality when they think about preparing programming for children, so that those environments will be excellent environments for them to grow and be prepared for school. So the Mini Minds Early Learning Scholarships will help our state address both of these priorities. Early childhood scholarships will ensure children from low-income families access to stable, high-quality care. These scholarships can only be used with child care providers committed to the parent-aware quality improvement process. This scholarship model will build capacity in the parent-aware system and incentivize providers to increase their standards of care. Investing in these scholarships will encourage healthy development and higher school readiness for children in the most challenging circumstances, because these scholarships are focused at children that from families beneath 185% of the federal poverty guideline. Strong early development will maximize the opportunity for our children to succeed in school and life. We look forward to working with the Education Committee throughout the session. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Evans? Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Evans.
Yes.
I so support the work that you're doing on making sure we have high-quality child care so all of our kids are prepared and ready to learn when they come to kindergarten. Now, I think the governor's proposal is for $44 million for scholarships.
That's correct.
For those early childhood scholarships for parent aware. Can you speak to the $200 million that we do spend, I think it's annually, on subsidized child care? In other words, we help parents.
Through the Child Care Assistance Program?
Yes, yes. And so my question is, I'd like to examine using the Parent Aware rating system for that much larger chunk of money that we're already using. Not saying we shouldn't do the $44 million. I'm just talking about extending right. that high quality to that large, larger population that we're already working with. And I do understand the need to build capacity, so it couldn't happen overnight, but right. I'd kind of like to know what child care works, if you've talked about that idea, what your thoughts are in that regard.
We have, and we see currently, Senator and Chair, we're looking at a DHS licensing bill that would include a differential in CCAP. So if you're a three-star provider, so it's a four-star scale. If you're a three-star provider, you would get a 15% differential above the reimbursement rate you would normally get for CCAP. If you're a four-star provider, you would get a 20% differential. So we are starting to build in those incentives into the system, presuming that that passes. We would like to see that built more thoroughly into the system. You know, the way that Mini Minds is geared is it's built to layer on top of child care assistance programming. So we want the system to work together, and we want to incentivize those providers who provide the highest quality care. And so we are looking at that, but we could certainly move faster. So.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
So is there a fiscal note then attached to that bill, I'm assuming? And do you know what it is at this point?
Chair, Senator Nelson, yes, there is a bill. There is an expansion of the basic sliding fee to use that money, and I don't know the exact funding number that's at, but I can get that information to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And this is it's very important, Mr. Evans, that you know Senator Franson, Senator Halverson, and Senator Nelson will be leading an effort to put our hands around on this very quickly here, because it's clear that there are requests to increase funding, both in DHS and education, K-12. And these are the same children. The models are different, but ultimately we're talking about the same kids.
Right.
So it is clear to many members in this committee that we need to understand what that means, who the kids are. And we also want to have some kind of an inventory of the multiple organizations that are now kind of directing or organizing efforts both within DHS and MDE and outside of those two departments, because there are multiple nonprofit organizations that are part of this model that are contracted to do the work both with DHS and the Early Learning Division in MDE. So this particular committee is very interested in the policy pieces. We know that, obviously, with the DHS portion, you will be going directly to DHS. But ultimately, again, we're talking about the same kids. So we will be connecting with you very soon. The three senators will be connecting with you, and they will be inviting more members of the committee to participate in this conversation because it's a pretty urgent conversation for us.
I agree. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think we have one more person that contacted the office for testimony, Mr. Peg Larson. This is Peg Larson. Ms. Larson, welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Senators. Welcome. Actually, I won't be doing most of the speaking. I'd like to introduce Jean Piccolo, who is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools, commonly known as MACS. So I'll just turn it over to Jean, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. The Minnesota Association of Charter Schools is a membership organization composed of charter schools, their boards, their teachers, and other individuals, including some of the authorizers of charter schools in the state of Minnesota. Just wanted to share with you a couple things today. What's being shared with you around is a primer on charter schools. Oftentimes, people don't understand what a charter school is, but a charter school is a public school that has been originally designed to be freed up from some of the rules and regulations in exchange for being both innovative and for performing at a higher level. And one of the challenges that charter schools have seen over the years is the fact that while innovation is supposed to be part of it, the measurement and accounting systems, accountability systems, have all been focused around one way of measuring success through standardized tests. So that is an issue that we are, and I'll mention that in another minute, a proposal for that. I do want to point out on the back side of that sheet of your, that we've shared with you, a little demographics about charter schools, that 56% of all students in charter schools are free and reduced students, which is about 1.5 times the statewide average for free and reduced students. 25% of our students are English as second language or English learner languages, which is about 2.5% of the over the state average. And 51% of our students are minority students, which again is twice as much as the statewide average for all public school students in the state. So we do serve significant populations of students who have come with a variety of disadvantages, both economic and also if they come with not having English skills to education. Just wanted to mention, four years ago now, this committee, passed an extensive overhaul of our charter school law. We worked with the committee to do a complete overhaul from paragraph 1 to page 22 of the law. And in those 4 years, our law has been ranked as the best in the nation. And just this week again, it was ranked number one law, charter school law in the country, because of the fact that it addresses so many elements of what chartering is about. But one of the things we have seen is that we believe it's a dynamic document. And through the lived experience of living out that law and the intent of the law, every year we find things that have to be addressed. And so part of our priorities this year are, again, going to be some specific recommendations to tweak the law around both the role of authorizers. Authorizers have a very important task in the charter school movement, is they are to hold schools accountable. But oftentimes they don't have the authority. They may have the responsibility, but they don't have the authority to make those decisions. So we want to clarify the law where those are issues. The second area is in terms of governance and conflicts of interest. We have continually found where there's little issues. And in fact, there was an attorney general's opinion this fall regarding a couple issues that said the legislature really should clarify the law because the way it was written, you could read it in two different directions. And the third thing we want to focus on in terms of tweaking the charter school law is the area around teacher evaluation, put in the law that our teachers need to be part of an evaluation system that each board adopts, and they would have the choice to whether to participate in the state system or create their own system. But we really believe that part of quality is make sure that all of our teachers are evaluated and our administrators and so forth. So we'll have some recommendations in those areas. The second big area that we'd like to, and we will be putting forth proposals, is in terms of we have about 25 schools that serve very high populations of students that are eligible under the graduation incentives rule, which means they have one of 12 or multiple issues in terms of whether they've been in adjudication, drug, mental health problems, pregnancy, and so forth. And one of the things about those schools is that if they're measured solely on standardized tests, a lot of those schools are not successful in that regard, because those kids come many times multiple years behind in reading and all kinds of basic skills. And so what we would like to propose a multiple measures way of looking at those schools that includes both academic assessment, post-secondary and workforce readiness, and student engagement. And we've had a working group for the last year really looking at that and have come up with a proposal that we think will address all of the different areas that need to be addressed to say whether or not the school is making a difference in those kids' lives. And then we would have that be part of the charter contract, the baseline targets and growth targets. And if those schools don't meet those, then that would be another rationale for closing down the program if they are not succeeding in those targets. So those are two areas that we would like to address this year, as well as we certainly have, you know, in terms of all the other issues of bullying and so forth, we are very strong supporters of dealing with those issues, and we'll have our positions on those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. We look forward to work with you, particularly in those areas that you described in your presentation with respect to the kids, you know, that have multiple challenges and that we know are not going to be able to have the scores that are necessary for graduation. I'm very interested in learning from you as to what are the recommendations, especially because we're going to have this very important initiative looking at, you know, how do we excite kids about graduating and moving into post-secondary experiences and opportunities. And this group is a group that we need to talk about. So I think that your feedback and your input into that process will be greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and Mr. Piccolo, I recall that when we set up charter schools, and I might be recalling something inaccurately, and so I'm asking you to clarify for me, that when we set up charter schools, we were really interested in finding out innovative methods of teaching that could be replicated for the public school system. Have you had any initiatives that are being replicated, or is there some sort of a process that initial provision asks for?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, if you remember right, that five of the six purposes of charter school law were about innovation, teaching methodologies, measuring outcomes, assessment systems, teacher involvement, and now I'm forgetting the fifth one.
You're ahead of me.
but there are, those were the major purposes, as well as improving student achievement.
Madam Chair, being able to be replicated.
Yes. And there have been some efforts to develop some tools and so forth around assessment, like the HOPE study came from that, and that is used now in schools around the country. I think one of the challenges we've had, and one of the things we did in the law 4 years ago now, is we put in a requirement and supported it that every school as part of their annual report has to address what are they doing innovatively, because that's one of the purpose of charter schools. So now we're actually collecting that information. I think the other thing I would say is that part of the innovative piece of charter schools has been somewhat stifled over the years because of the focus, as I mentioned earlier, about the only thing that really counts in terms of whether you are succeeding as an institution, as a school, is on the standardized tests. Mm-hmm. And so that has diverted a lot of attention. It's not an excuse, but I think it has diverted a lot of attention from the innovative things. There are, I think, one of the things we have seen is that some school districts have implemented things that charters have done, and we've had schools and charters, district schools and charters work together innovatively. We have in Forest Lake, for example, the school district and the charter school work together to really create a Spanish immersion program that goes now from K through 12, working together. It was the charter school that started the program, and then working together with the district, now it's a seamless program. The kids can go from the charter school to the high school and so forth. So there have been some efforts to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo.
Thank you.
Members, we have a handout from Mr. Lundell, who was not able to testify. Thank you, Ms. Larson. Who was not able to testify but really wanted to make sure that you do receive a handout with their priorities. Members, I hope that this has been helpful. I think that we need to open opportunities to really hear from the public, and I know these are very long presentations, but we do need to hear from the experts and need to hear from the different groups that are working out there. As I said earlier, we are. I have been talking to members. I met with all of you, and there was a clear suggestion that we need to form working committees because we have a lot of information that we need to digest, and we have only 2.5 hours, and it's really lunchtime. It's right after session. We're going to be struggling to cover a lot of the material that we need to cover. So we're going to be working to put together working committees, bipartisan working committees that are going to be working with the public. We're going to be asking members to serve in those committees, and it's going to be really based on, you know, some of you are serving in different committees that are very important to these conversations. For instance, in early childhood education, we needed somebody who is part of the DHS, for the Health and Human Services Committee, like Senator Franson is. We wanted to make sure that we had in higher education somebody who is in the three committees, in the K-12 policy committee, as well as the higher education committee. So Senator Kent is serving in those three committees, and she will be helping us lead that conversation. And then Senator Dahl is going to be working with us to make sure that we move in a direction to really understand what do we need to do with assessment and testing. So I will be asking all of you to please think about those different areas, and we'll be contacting you directly. And then we will be announcing the composition of these working committees and begin to just really dive into those different areas. Members, do you have any questions?
Ask if anybody else from the public wants to testify.
Okay. Anybody from the public that wishes to testify? Please. Senator Wolf, I am going to my. I can't see very well with these glasses anymore, so I was thinking it was you, but welcome, welcome, Senator, to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did leave a voicemail and an email. So oh. I don't know if there's a better way to try and contact you that I was wanting to testify or. Okay.
Let's make sure
I need to contact members. Somebody different.
Thank you. We do have a little bit of a problem right now. Brad just came on board, and I think that we're having to figure out, you know, how do we announce this. So probably went to your voicemail. I don't know where it went, but our apologies. I think we're getting
whatever
better
is
at
on
it,
the committee page.
Yeah, so let's make sure we check on that, Brad. Thank you so much, Senator, and welcome. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Pam Wolf, representing Minnesota Education Advocates. And I know we are not discussing issues, and I think there's been a lot of that. I know there will be time later for discussion, testimony, and debate. So I just wanted to give a background of what this group is and how it came to be, and introduce myself as well for those of you who do not know me. I have been a teacher for 26 years, and through that course many years ago, I actually had the thought of starting an organization like this one, but couldn't find time between the teaching and the coaching and raising kids, so it was always on the back burner. But I was happy to hear the question about the report card and Senator Salzman's response as far as grading policies. That was one of the early on triggers that I had as a teacher when 10 years ago in the school district I was teaching at that time, on the last day of school, we had money that was left to spend, and it was determined that we were going to buy new desks and new tables. And in order to do that, we had to get rid of our old desks, but the current laws or policies or whoever was making the decisions on that one would not allow us to sell them, to give them away to families that could use them. And so they took every desk out of the school building on that last day of school to the back parking lot and smashed them and got rid of them. And it just ate me up of what a waste that was. And so I, and again, what was mentioned by Senator Salzman, the hands being tied, that they couldn't do something different because that's what the policy was. And so I was happy to hear them talking about policy parts. Another part of the background for this group being started was myself, again, as a teacher, having some different philosophies from, along with many other teachers, different philosophies that were being presented in education by our representation. And so that was another motivator to get this group going. This group is an alliance of mostly educators, but it's educators, parents, and other community members who are interested in four basic principles. And those are that policies, funding, and reforms should be centered around student success, fiscal responsibility, local control, and practical. The policy should be practical. And I just listed some of the priorities. We're not limited to that. The request was to list priorities, but we would be looking at any of the policies, both what you guys come up with at the state, ones that exist, one that are being proposed, as well as at the locals. And I am not a paid lobbyist. I am currently just a volunteer advocate for the group. And so I just would say, Madam Chair, that if there's any other place I need to go to find out what's going on, I'd appreciate it because I'm not paid to be here every day, all day. And if anybody has any questions about the group, you can go to www.minnesotaeducationadvocates.org or you can contact me. I'd be happy to give you input as a teacher as well as the president of this group representing several others that are like-minded. I was happy to hear the special ed. That's one of my areas. I'm K-12, special ed, PE, health, also highly certified in science and social studies as well. So I have many hats that I would certainly be happy to be used as a resource if anybody's interested.
Thank you, Senator. For those that you didn't know, Senator Pam Wolf served in the Senate, so we had the privilege to work with her during the last 2 years, and I'm very excited to see you doing advocacy on behalf of parents and kids, which is your passion. So welcome, and we'll keep your information. Is this a statewide organization, Senator?
Madam Chair, yes, it is.
That's great. Thank you, members. Any questions? Senator, for your presence and for the information.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. With this, members, we are going to adjourn, and we will be... Yes. lots of information. You know what? I'm going to do that in our next meeting while we have all of the members. I would like to introduce our intern and talk about his great story. but I would like to have all the members here. So we will talk a little bit about Blanca's story as a student and our intern's story next time. Well, we have all of the members. So for now, we're going to adjourn. Thank you, members.